I'm Colleen Cosmo Murphy, founder of Classic Album Sundays. We tell the stories behind the albums that have changed our lives through our worldwide immersive listening events and our website, which hosts artist interview videos, playlists, and blogs about our favorite albums. In this week's podcast, I speak with George Evelyn of Nightmares on Wax about their second album, 1995's Smoker's Delight, one of the most significant albums from the 90s avant-garde hip-hop, trip-hop scene. This podcast is from a series of Classic Album Sundays programs that I host for Worldwide FM, an award-winning online radio station with a global audience. Worldwide FM represents presenters and music from marginalized societies and subcultures from Mumbai, Johannesburg, Berlin, Los Angeles, Tokyo, London, and beyond. Once you have listened to this podcast, I encourage you to listen to the album in its entirety, following our listening guidelines, as in this way, you can have your own Classic Album Sundays at home. Today we're going to get the inside scoop behind an album that, along with Massive Attack's Blue Lines, Portishead's Dummy, and Tricky's Max and Quay, is one of the defining moments of down-tempo trip-hop and chill-out. To this day, as soon as we drop the needle on the opening notes of Smoker's Delight, we succumb to the beauty, the charm, and the magic of its dreamy fusion of dub, soul, jazz, funk, and hip-hop. And joining us today is the man behind Nightmares on Wax, George Evelyn, who is live and direct from Ibiza. Hey, George, how you doing?
Hey, Colleen, how you doing? Do I call you Colleen or do I call you Cosmo?
You can call me Cosmo. You know we're going to get to that story later, right?
All right. Okay, we're going to keep it all cosmic.
Keep it all cosmic today. Thanks so much. How are you doing today?
I'm good. A little bit hot, but that's nothing to complain about. But I'm happy to be here. Thank you for supporting the record. So I'm happy to be here.
Oh, thank you so much. And please don't brag about how hot it is, because broadcasting from London is quite gray and gloomy here today. But thanks again so much for joining us. And before we get into the story behind some of the tracks on the album and playing some of the songs and playing some of the samples that inspired it, I just want to rewind a little bit and really set the stage for this album, because the story for this album began way before 1995. And if I'm correct, you were in a b-boy crew called Soul City Rockers in the 80s. Yeah. And you really started making some of these samples that we hear on Smoker's Delight, which came out, you know, like almost a decade later. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, a lot of people know I have a hip-hop background. That's what really, really, apart from my reggae sound system background, hip-hop was what really set me free on experimenting with music. So I came through the whole breakdance era. Like, literally, I've been a b-boy since 1982, so a long, long time. And basically, obviously, from being sucked into the whole hip-hop culture thing, from rapping to scratching to graffiti to breakdancing, you know, all the art forms that are involved in that. The experimentation with DJing and with collecting records started at a really young age. So, but that was with the most minimal amount of equipment. You know what I mean? So it was like, you know, one turntable, a tape machine, you know, stuff like that. So back then I used to record 10 seconds of a record on a cassette and then record another 10 seconds of another record and make these mega mixes on cassette. And like now in hindsight, I understand that I was sampling, but I didn't realize I was sampling, you know? So we used to make these mega mix tapes. When I say me, my old partner, Boy Wonder, a guy called John Halnon, who I started out with and first started out Nightmares and Wax with, was doing bedroom mixes and these really, really kind of crazy sort of mixtapes and stuff. And then it wasn't until like sort of later on in Lounge Around, probably say 87, when I got the opportunity to go in the studio and then like got the opportunity to get a four-track machine and then got the opportunity to borrow a drum machine. And then me and Boy Wonder, my original partner, we made our first music and released our first music in 89. But at the same time, like I said, we didn't really have the equipment. And I was obviously, I mean, like, when we talk about collecting records and digging for records, for me, what really set me off on that was, you know, I was collecting reggae records and stuff like that at a younger age, but when I got into scratching, when you listen to these old electro records, we'd hear these records being cut up on them. We'd like, oh, that 1, 2, 3, 4 was like, what's that from? You know, and then you find out it was James Brown. And then you start buying James Brown records, and then you find out it was Curtis Mayfield, then you find out it was this and that. So at first we used to collect cuts before we were collecting breaks. Do you know what I mean? And then we got into the whole, once you had two turntables, doing the whole break things and doing the deck to decks thing and stuff like that. And that's when I really started getting into my collecting samples and collecting things like that. And then I came across this Quincy Jones record, Summer in the City. I came across that record in 87. And at the time, I still had not had the four track. And I remember hearing this record and thinking, oh my God, I would love to sample this record. And I literally had it on my shelf in my bedroom, like above my decks and stuff. And then like, I had like a Casio SK1 sampler that had like 1.6 second sampling time on it, but it just couldn't fit the whole like 2-bar loop on there. It was just too long and the track's really slow. So what we used to do anyway back then is I used to get, if a record was too slow, I would like play it as fast as I could and then play it on the lowest scale on the keyboard to slow it back down. But I could never get the full 2 bars of this record. And I was like, one day, when I get a sampler, one day I'm going to sample this record. And it was always there. And then it wasn't until me and Kevin got the record deal with Warp and stuff. And we had a bit of money and we bought an Akai S950 sampler. And then a mother keyboard and then like an Atari ST computer. And I was like, obviously the first thing I was going for was that record. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, for those that don't really know, like with Knights Interlude, which is obviously inspired by that record, there was a Knights Interlude that was made on the first album, A Word of Science, which was released in 91 with me and Boy Wonder. So that was my first opportunity of actually sampling that record. And I literally sampled it to bits, you know, on that. There was no playing on it or anything like that. And then when I'd already been making music with Robin Taylor Firth, he joined us, he started playing keys for us, because we were not like I said, we came from a very DJ, hardcore background. We weren't really musicians, but we didn't come from that school of thought. We came from the street, so
yeah.
We weren't really into chords, we weren't really into keys, we weren't really into all these things, you know what I mean? But then we wanted to start really getting our production into like songwriting and stuff like that, and there's just some elements that you need to learn, you know, which we weren't really capable of doing. And we brought in Robin Taylor Firth, who's an incredible keyboard player and producer, and we did a couple of house tracks with him. And then I came up with the idea of recreating Knight's Interlude to Knight's Interlude for Smoker's Delight.
Now that one, you actually didn't clear the sample for Quincy.
Yeah.
But for the second one, you did clear the sample. You had to clear the sample and you had to write a letter to Quincy Jones.
Yeah, how did you know that?
I'm really clever. I could just, yeah, we have this like psychic conversation going on right now, George, even though you're in Ibiza. Or maybe it's because you're in Ibiza. Maybe that's the reason why. So tell us about what did you write to Quincy to convince him that
even though
you'd already sampled him and it wasn't cleared, that this time you wanted to clear it properly?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I remember Rob Mitchell, bless his soul, he was speaking to the publishers at the time and they were just like, there's just no way you're going to be able to sample this record.
Want to say Rob Mitchell was one of the co-founders of Warp Records for those listening who may not know, along with Steve Beckett.
Yeah, so bless him. So he was like, look, you're gonna have to write a letter, because this, he says, I don't know if it's true, he said, but this publisher's saying he's not gonna clear it unless he knows why you're sampling it. Mm-hmm. Now, it was, I would say it was easy to express that letter because he's my mentor. You know, Quincy Jones is like, for me as a producer and as a musician, he's just like such a massive inspiration anyway.
Why is he a mentor to you?
Because of all the, like from the start of his career, all the musical kind of like, how can I explain it? All the waves that happen in music, you know, like you could be really, really hot for a minute and then the next wave comes along and nobody's interested. And you have to reinvent yourself. And it's not that you follow the trend, you still follow your heart. And no matter what you do, even if what you don't like around you, or you don't like what's around you that's happening, you take yourself out of the situation, you go dig deeper into your music and you find yourself somewhere else. And that's what his like journey of his career is like. And that's what is a massive inspiration to me, is like to stick to your guns, always believe in what you're doing, do you know what I mean? And don't let the outside illusion affect you, do you know what I mean? And that's why he's been such a, and just obviously his productions are that like a vast, do you know what I mean? So just to be able to do that and maintain a career for so long, do you know what I mean? But every time you come back with something that's just so ridiculously out there, you know, so.
Incredible. I mean, I don't know if you ever read his autobiography, but it is amazing. So I suggest that to anyone watching today, if you may have some time on your hands. And it's a quite a big autobiography. And even like the awards section at the back, is the appendix is crazy.
Well, I actually have that autobiography, but when I watched the documentary, which I cried, I laughed when I watched it. Yeah. I was like all over the place watching it, because I could just, it was just like, and by the end of it, I wasn't only inspired, but I just felt like, oh my God, I've got work to do.
I know. Absolutely. Why don't we have a little listen to Summer in the City? I think that'll be a kind of a nice kind of way to kind of get into the album. Should we have a little listen to that?
Let's do that.
But at night it's a different world. Ain't it nice just to be good?
Oh my gosh, that is just absolutely gorgeous. I think I can see the sun coming out from behind the clouds right now from that.
It's just magical. I mean, like when I first heard that, I was just, I just melted really, you know, and like every time I hear it really, I just think music like that, I just always think like, imagine what it was like being in the studio at that time when that piece was being created, you know, to just be there, you know.
And that's Valerie Simpson from Ashford and Simpson on vocals. She worked a lot with Quincy.
Quincy, yeah.
Yes, yeah. And I bet you were quite proud as well, because you did sample that on A Word of Science and Night's Interlude. And then the following year, Far Side came out with Bizarre Ride to the Far Side and had the sample the same thing on Passing Me By. So you kind of got in there before Far Side did.
Well, you know, you know how that works in hip hop. You know how important that is. You know, like even now, like when we do shows, even though we go to, you know, we do live shows in America and we perform the song live, which we'll play in a minute, is funny. Like, you know, you get the odd fan come up and go, oh yeah, I love that song where you sampled Far Side.
Now, why did you decide to start your sophomore album with the same sample and just a variation of a theme from Night's Interlude to Night's Introlude?
Do you know what? It, I wouldn't say it was planned. But when I look back, even at, like if I look at the version of it with Lemuey on Capsule Soul, it documents the evolution of Nightmares and Wax as far as the approach to music, about the adventure in music, as far as production is concerned. Like I said, once we started working with Robin Taylor Firth, and we could bring a more musical element in it and be able to express their melodies and them to be played in such an amazing way, it just opened up the playing field then for making music. So once we did like the version on Smoker's Delight, and then obviously Robin's played on quite a few of the tracks on Smoker's Delight, it just opened up my mind to what was possible. You know, it wasn't just the fact that I could obviously sample records and get the inspiration from there, but now I had like this array of musicians around me. Chris Dawkins on guitar, I had Hamlet Luton on bass, like I said, Robin Taylor Firth on keys, Shovel the Drum Warrior on percussion.
You know, it's like a friend of mine too.
All of these people, it's like all these amazing musicians that I have at my disposal that I could sample. So that then started to really sort of push me in that creativity and what I could imagine, and also using samples in a way where I would get a sample, build the musicians around it, take the sample out, and then use the sample.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So just use the inspiration. So because it's all about, with Smoke's Delight, it was all about creating the ghost in the music. Because I
the
always
ghost in the music.
Yeah, because there was
what
like.
What do you mean by that?
Like, because the idea behind Smoker's Delight, obviously, people think it's just about getting stoned, right? You know, and there's
really?
there's definitely
they don't
things.
Think that, do they? That,
well, some in some quarters.
Oh yeah, okay. All right.
But there's definitely, you know, like you smoke the herb, it opens up channels, music hits you in a different way. You think you hear certain things which might not be there. So I wondered what it would be like to make the things that you thought were there. Do you know what I mean? So it wouldn't even matter if you were smoking or not. Do you know what I'm saying? When
so
you listen
like
to music. So I try to fill in them the spaces. I call it the ghost in the music. It should be the spirit in the music.
I think Miles Davis called it the space between notes.
Space is the place. Can we create?
Yeah, space is the place. Sun
can we create so much melody and beauty with space? Can we do that?
A Word of Science really feels like you have your foot planted in the Detroit techno Sheffield bleep warp sound of your first couple of singles, Dextrous and Aftermath.
Leads.
Yeah, and then going into the other foot being in the kind of chill out, down tempo, trip hop kind of sound. And when you hear the opening notes on Smoker's Delight, you really feel like you've kind of come full. This is like a new journey. Like you've really thrown yourself into the down-tempo, chill-out kind of sound.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was, you know, like a lot of people don't know, I was making this album 5 years prior to it being released. So, and it was, you know, it was something I was shared with my friends, and that's how it was born, really. And, you know, there's an infamous night out where we were, you know, like we were part of this rave culture, the rave movement and everything, and all that was all new at the time, you know. So what did you do after hours, you know, like if you even after, I mean even after hours what did you do, you know what I mean? So because at that time clubs were finishing at 2, some maybe at 4, but then there was still an illegal rave going on or whatever, or you know, whatever the parties were going on afterwards. But then what did you do after that? Because you weren't going to bed. Do you know what I mean? So we were going back to friends' houses, or, you know, taking acid and, you know, doing all these adventurous things. And like there was one particular, we'd been going back to one of my friend's house, a friend of mine called Marshall. We'd been going back to his house and listening to different music and getting mixtapes from other after parties, like the from Manchester, the crews over there and stuff like that. But then like this KLF album came out, the Chill Out album, and I remember being at Marshall's house, and I remember sat on his living room floor, and like, you know, White Lightnings at the time, I think they were called. And then I was like, you know what, because I was already sampling that and stuff, right? Remember, I got the Quincy Jones thing happening. I was already sampling these other stuff, because my other side was me as just Ease, experienced a sample expert, which was more in the hip hop field, as well as me being Nightmares and Wax with Boy Wonder and stuff. And I was like, and I just got this moment of inspiration, and I was just like, you know what, I'm gonna make my own chill out album, but I'm gonna make a hip hop chill out album, and I'm gonna call it Smoker's Delight. And it was literally just like that. Do you know what I mean? But I was already making the music, because we were listening to the samples and the loops at the afters, or when we went and did gigs in Scotland, like Street Rave and stuff like that, or Southport Weekender. We'd go, even at Southport Weekender, we'd go and we'd sit in the car and listen to the loops, do you know what I mean, when we were in the zone and stuff like that. So it was already growing into something that I'd had personally with me and my friends, do you know what I mean? So over that time, Steve Beckett and Rob Mitchell, they were coming to some of the gigs with us, and I remember we was at Southport Weekend then, we played and we were all hanging out in the chalet, and I were playing these loops to Steve and Rob, and they were like, what is this? Do you know what I mean? I was like, yo, it's Miss May Experience, a sample expert project, blah, 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 blah. And that was just bubbling away for about 4 or 5 years before it came to the point of me actually going, right, I'm going to do this album. Do you know what I mean? I'm going to do it as Nightmares and Wax.
As well, because Smoker's Delight came out the year after the Criminal Justice and Public Order Act of 1994, which was really kind of clamping down on illegal raids.
Yeah.
So there must have been more home listening happening at that time, and of course there was more commercial clubs that would have chill out rooms. Do you think that in a sense kind of helped set the stage for the success of Smoker's Delight?
No, do you know what? I always explain that period of time as being part of a wave. There's like a wave that happens, but nobody knew the wave was coming.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And then we all got swept by the wave and we rode the wave. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that wave was not just music. It was what we were doing socially. You know, it was like everything was just changing. You know, the times were pretty tough in England as well. We were coming out of a recession, all that sort of stuff. So there's just a different wave going on. A lot of like social boundaries have been opened up, you know, in my hometown, there were certain parts of town I couldn't go because of the colour of my skin. Do you know what I mean? That started to change. Do you know what I mean? Some of the so-called football supporters that were hooligans and stuff started being on the dance floor next to the people from the hood. Do you know what I mean? So all of a sudden, our community, from being from my neighbourhood and growing up where I'm growing around, now became broader and wider, and we started going to different cities. And, do you know what I mean? All of a sudden, this world opened up, but we were all coming out of... Not all of us, but a lot of us. You can speak to a guy called Gerald, you can speak to Winston Ezra. We all came out of B-boys, we all came out of hip-hop. We were all breakers, we were DJs or MCs and stuff like that. And then, you know, we had this house thing with us as well, which was with us from like 85, that we were listening to, you know what I mean? So, and then all of a sudden we had our sound, which involved bass, which connected our sound system background as well. Do you know what I mean? So we were just, all of a sudden, everything we were being brought up with started to melt into one pot. Do you know what I mean? And this expression came out. Do you know what I mean? And then what with the After Hours thing, nobody could predict that was going to happen. It just happened, because then what do you do afterwards? What do you listen to afterwards? Then we started making music for what we were listening to afterwards. Do you know what I mean? So it was just like, wow, it was just, yeah, unpredictable. And I just think you could say timing is everything. Do you know what I mean? But I think the album is a reflection of what was happening, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get to some more music. The Crusaders were another inspiration for you. How did you discover this particular song, A Ballad for Joe Lewis?
So, Joe Sample's like... I mean, as far as keyboardists are concerned, Joe Sample and Bob James are like really, really big inspirations for me, as you can really, really hear that in my music and stuff. And the Crusaders, they're just, well, I mean, like the list is endless. Do you know, I didn't even realize I had the best of Crusaders album. That was the first album I had.
And how old were you when you had that album?
I had that. Well, actually, I'm going to do a confession now. I stole it from my brother's bedroom.
Older brother?
Older brother. Yeah, yeah. So it wasn't.
Do you still have it? Did you ever give it back?
No, I've still got it. You know, I mean, he doesn't even know that. If he's listening, now he does.
Now he does. Yeah. Oh,
but
well.
Yeah. So it was like, that was the first, you know, it's one of them where your ego's out, you have a listen. So, but it ended up in my collection anyway. And, There was this song on it, do you know what I mean? And I was just like, oh my God, this song's so deep. It's just so, so deep. Do you know what I mean? It gets me every time. And I'm going to start it while I'm talking, because the intro is quite long.
Good.
And basically everything about the way that Joe Sample plays, I think the way that he plays keys and everything, he just talks. He's actually talking to you. Do you know what I mean? And I love the fact that somebody else could be listening to how he's playing, and what it's saying to them is completely different, and that's what I hear when he's playing, you know. It's like that. So the deepness in the playing, and a lot of the whole band's incredible, but just the deepness in the playing really, really inspired me from a smoker's point of view. Do you know what I mean? This is the kind of thing that I would listen and I'd be like, oh my God, like, imagine making this out of this, imagine doing this, just with this new, let's say, hip-hop electronic head on. Do you know what I mean? I mean, well, what would be the futuristic version of this? And that's what I try to express in Smoker's Delight. So I'd like to say, at the time of sampling this with the Akai S950, what I was doing, there was a function in there that had this, it was called an envelope function. So it meant you could loop something, and even though you were starting at this point, you could get the loop to loop from a different point. So what I would do is I would find sections of records like that I liked, and I was just keep moving the loop point, like randomizing it. And then that got me into... I'm going to skip to the Stars track now, but then that got...
And with Stars, yeah. You also had your own live keys on there from Robin as well, I should mention.
Yes, so with the inspiration of that track, I got myself into this hypnotic loop, and I was like, oh my God, what would it be like to replay that and really, really open it up? So that's how I got the inspiration from the tracks. That's why I say a lot of the time, what I was doing, I was using the inspiration of the sample and recreating what I thought I could hear, which is the ghost in the sound, and then removing the sample, you know, which is how Stars... And I must have... There's, within the album, all the titles have a meaning to me and my friends, a particular time and a particular place. And before I actually go into, like, arranging the songs and stuff like that, I just have the loop going. So I had, like, I've still got loads of tapes of just the loops. Yeah, so and I call these tapes experience. So we'd go and listen to these loop tapes. So me and my friend Simon, with a friend of ours, Caroline, we'd been out one night, we're tripping again.
and you saw stars.
Well, this is the thing, we'd gone into the countryside and we were like parked up in this, like, I don't know, like it's Beck or Field or whatever. And we were listening to different music and that, and I put my sample tape on. And we were full on this trip, and we were looking out the car window, and the sample came on, and my friend Simon went, look at the stars, oh, right? Yeah. And this is how the track became Stars. So Stars, inspired by the Crusaders, and the track by the Crusaders is a ballad for Joe Louis. A ballad for Joe Louis.
Now, would you say that in a way, the way that you use samples had a bit more in line with like American hip hop than with what was going on in the UK at the time?
Definitely. Well, yeah, I always tip my hat to hip hop because that's what gave me the approach in music in the first place of manipulation, apart from reggae sound system as well, but just the fact that you can manipulate anything, you know, with the littlest means, so littlest amount of equipment or studio or anything, you can actually create something. And that's what I'm forever grateful for. And hip-hop, it gave me that mentality that it's possible to make anything with the least amount of stuff. Do you know what I mean? So, but then obviously there comes a point where your imagination gets pushed even further, you know, and I felt that I would, you know, with Smoker's Delight, I was 100% focusing on what I was buzzing off of. Even though I was inspired by the techniques of hip-hop, I wasn't following any particular style in hip-hop. Do you know what I mean? I was just 100% just, this is what me and my friends are buzzing on. Do you know what I mean?
Now in Leeds, I know that in Bristol and in London, there was a big sound, like Jamaican sound system culture. Yeah. Was there a bit of that in Leeds as well when you were growing up?
Most definitely.
Okay, tell us about that.
So well, There's Irish and Steppers and people like that that are well known that are from Leeds. But before that, from the age of about sort of probably 9 years old, something like that. I mean, I was really good friends of a guy called Dennis Smith, and his brother Clifford Smith was the head of a sound system called Messiah. Mm. And where they used to build their speaker boxes, the basement that they did that.
The proper way.
I used to go to that basement because it was across the street from my school. So after school, me and Dennis would go there and just sit and hang out and watch him build speaker boxes.
Oh,
do you know
amazing.
What I mean?
Yeah.
And I remember him getting an Octopad and a sound effects on a certain day and just being blown away by this. Do you know what I mean? And I was being taught at an early age anything that was bigger that was better, which meant bass. Do you know what I mean? And then like the whole fanatical side of collecting records came from me collecting The Scientist, the dub albums, and the whole
Scientist is great, yeah.
Yeah, and the whole cartoon artwork and stuff that went with the covers, which inspired the Smoker's Delight cover as well.
Ah, interesting. And also like Super Ape also had a very similar kind of cover, like Scientist as well. So you were getting dubified quite young, but it seems like you were also getting electrofied. So let's brings me into Nucleus, the Jam on Revenge, the Wiki Wiki song, which you and I were talking about the other day on the phone, Cosmo D.
You mean your namesake.
That's how I got my name. I'm not even joking. Anyways.
Yeah. So this is really, really like such an important record for me. Mm-hmm. Simply because I remember me and my friends, like when we heard this record, we didn't really know what we were listening to. You know, it was from another planet. Yeah. You know what I mean? And to have that feeling and have music do that to you, you know, we really felt like we were going into the future, you know?
Oh, that brings me back to my old radio show in that year. But you also used a Norman Whitfield Undisputed Truth sample on this too, Cosmic Contact.
Cosmic Contact, yes.
Yeah, that's a double Cosmo here. You know where I'm leading.
Yes.
So let's have a little listen to Man the Journey, just so we can hear how you used the Nucleus sample.
Yeah, it brings back a lot of good memories.
So what's the story behind the title? I never really ask about song titles, but since you brought it up, you said all of the titles have special meaning. I have to ask what Man the Journey, where that came from.
Yeah, I mean, like, to be honest with you, I felt as well the way that it appeared on the album as well, it felt like that we got like halfway through the album and as this release happens. Like we've been kind of grooving along really slowly and really like, do you know what I mean? Like lackadaisy and like, you know, like, but then there's this other part of us that wants to get up and just be in it.
Do you know what I mean? Step.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And be present in the journey of yourself. Do you know what I mean? And I kind of like, obviously this is one of my smoke-filled imaginations and thoughts and stuff like that. And I always felt that this song that I felt like I was going somewhere.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? This felt like the journey, you know?
Well, it's interesting. This entire album, Smoker's Delight, really kind of sits apart from the rest of the output of Warp. I mean, you know, Warp with the kind of artificial intelligence compilations, LFO. It seems to me that Smoker's Delight was kind of this like ray of sunshine and, you know, something that didn't have the same kind of tension. It was about more releasing the tension. And I'm wondering, we were talking earlier about what was going on in Britain at the time in terms of the Criminal Justice and Public Order Act of 1994, but also what was going on specifically in Leeds, because Leeds, there was a whole textile industry, and then there was a whole deindustrialization. So were times tough in Leeds when you were making this album?
Definitely. Like I say, we were all like in the aftershock of Thatcher.
Yeah.
Really? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And, you know, like I said, that meant all the things that I grew up with were taken away, like all the youth centres and, you know, all the things that were part of our community were taken away, basically. So we had to just make our own stuff happen, do you know what I mean? Which either meant doing these parties or, do you know what I mean? That was our release. You lived for the weekend. You lived for the weekend, literally, because they won't know what else happening, you know what I mean? It was literally that, you know, and that was our life, you know. So, and you did whatever you could, you did whatever you had to do to make sure you were going to be out that weekend. Do you know what I mean? So the week was the hustle.
Right, right. Well, it seems like this album kind of brings you to a more kind of positive, optimistic kind of reality, or maybe it's a bit of escapism as well, as opposed to some of the other stuff that was coming out. I mean, still amazing records coming out on Warp, don't get me wrong. It's just a very different sonic flavor and different personality.
Well, I have to say as well, like, you know, it was an interesting point for me because me and Kevin had parted ways. Kevin didn't really want to do what we were doing anymore and stuff like that. And it was kind of like, Warp were like, what are you going to do? Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, well, I'm going to do my Smokers album and things like that. And they were like, do you want to do it for Warp? And I was like, yeah, I'd love to. And then like they were like, well, we'll probably only do like a couple of thousand or something like that or whatever. I was like, yeah, whatever, man, so as long as the music's out there. Do you know what I mean? And it was like that. And then Steve Beckett was like, you know, are you gonna do it live? And I was like, yeah. And I said that without thinking about it. And then I had to do it. Maybe I had to put a band together and everything and all that sort of stuff. So, but I mean, you know, it's now, and in hindsight, I look at that kind of thing of like just throwing yourself in the deep end. Do you know what I mean? And you have to react, you have to make something happen. And it had been a struggle. That early part of the 90s had been a real roller coaster of like, you know, you're young, you're partying, you're going out, you're having a great time, but then at the same time, the person you've grown up with that you're doing music with, you're kind of both going your separate ways, you're both wanting different things, you're, do you know what I mean? And then like I'm meeting new crowds of people that are outside of my community. And, you know what I mean? All of a sudden your world's just like, it's like changing, it's really, really fast. But then what you've kind of like rode the wave on, which were the first releases of Warp and doing them EPs, has kind of started to fade down a bit. Do you know what I mean? Because like it's gone into another realm of whatever. This is why I talk about Quincy Jones, of like being in that situation where like what you were riding doesn't exist anymore. And now it's something else that's happening. So who are you and what do you do?
Well, this kind of leads me into our next artist, actually, which is Smokey Robinson, because the song that you sampled, Just My Soul Responding, was from his first solo LP, Smokey, which is after he left the Miracles. So he did a similar thing. He's kind of transitioning musically. And this song is really interesting because it's actually a protest song. Yes. And Smokey Robinson wasn't really known for protest songs. He was known more for that sugar-coated Motown pop soul. Do you want to tell us a bit about the song?
Yeah, I mean, like, to be honest with you, like, I found the song totally by accident. I literally found it. I tried to remember now. Actually, I wasn't even at home. I was in a record store. I was actually digging, and the record came on. And I was just like, what is this? Do you know what I mean? And I recognized the voice, but I just didn't know the music. Do you know what I mean? And I heard the like I say, I was totally in sample break mode. So I was like, I heard, do you know what I mean? I just heard these violins and shit going. And I was just like, oh my God, that would be like, this is like sugar. This is like, you know what I mean? It was like so deep. And then like, so I bought the album. Do you know what I mean? And obviously, I must admit, I sampled it and stuff like that. But it wasn't until a little bit afterwards that I actually listened to the album. Do you know what I mean? You know, like, because sometimes you're digging and you're actually quite selfish when you're digging. You're just looking for breaks and samples and all that sort of stuff. You're on that one. You know what I mean? Because you want to get the freshest shit before anybody else does. It used to be like that. I'm not like that now.
No, of course not.
Do you know what I mean?
Matured since then.
But it was so, honestly, it was, when I think about the whole, you know, like I came out of like so if you've got sound system, which is competitive, you've got breakdancing, which is competitive, then you got the DJing in hip hop, which is competitive. You got everything was like, even Gerald, a guy called Gerald, and all the people that were releasing tunes at that time will tell you what it was like up north. You were representing your crew when you were dropping a tune. So it was so competitive, and I come from that world. So even when it comes to collecting breaks and stuff like that, you know, I will start the track. Even when it comes to collecting breaks and stuff like that, it was the same mentality. You needed to be the first.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? You know, it was just that. So a lot of the time you were digging and buying records, but you weren't really studying the records as much as you should do. Do you know what I mean? But I think music finds you, right?
Absolutely. And this is the lyrics are beautiful. It's about life in the ghetto and the plight of Native Americans.
Yeah.
Raised in the ghetto, get the run down side of the track. And there are forces who do everything they can do. Call me back because my skin is black. Oh,
yeah, Smokey Robinson, one of the most important writers of Motown.
Writer, if, arranger, he arranger. Did so much. I mean, all of the Motown people, that they did so many jobs, you know, writing, producing, arranging, playing piano, playing drums, whatever they had to do. So let's hear what you did with Bless My Soul. And I think you also sample Barry White as well on this for Bless My Soul. But I want to hear how you transform that Smokey Robinson sample.
You did your homework.
I always do my homework. I'm a good student.
Bless my soul.
Yeah. I really love this album, George. I woke up and put it on first thing in the morning, and I was just like, oh, such a great album. Thank you so much. Now, the next sample you're going to play for us is quite an obscure one. You were talking about how competitive it was, and I think still is, really, for finding those obscure samples. And this one is quite obscure. It's from 1969, I believe, and it's by the Night Strings, featuring Homer Dennison, Black Sand and White Stars. Can you tell us about how you picked up this record? Because that's not an obvious classic.
Yeah, well, to be honest, because like I say, you know, I was really, a lot. You can tell with a lot of my sampling, I'm really into like keys, strings, and guitars, do you know what I mean? Especially of a certain era and certain time. And at the time when a lot of people were collecting breaks of like, you know, like I said, the regular stuff like James Brown, and, you know, the Meters and stuff like that, I was already venturing into this sort of cafe lounge sort of compilation albums and stuff like that, because there's some stuff from back in the days that's just like next level, like even if it's just a symphony orchestra that's just recreating a lot of classics, you're always going to find a quirky section of maybe a classic where they played it slightly different or wrong even. But the quirkiness is what the attraction is in it, and this album was just in one of these easy listening sections, and I came across it and I just took a gamble.
Let's have a listen. You know, that kind of music, if it was just playing everywhere, piped in around the world as music, we'd have no war. It just makes you feel good.
Yes, that's what we're all about, feeling good, all about feeling
absolutely
good.
Absolutely. Now, let's hear what you did with that in the Nightmares on Wax track, Mission Venice, on Smoker's Delight. We'll be right back.
So at the time, I remember I recorded Smokers Delight in three different studios. Well, four, including my one at home, but actually recording, I did a studio in Sheffield called, it was actually Warp Studios, and then Touchwood Studios in Leeds. And then I did two songs, which was this song and Cruise Don't Stop, I did at Richard Brown Studio in Wakefield. And at the time I was using, on this is actually the snare and the hats are a 909 drum machine, which was quite odd for the type of music I was doing it with. You know, but I'd also found this technique of like being able to have a sample, but then use volume controls to turn down different sections of the sample, which is where I got the dubbing effect. So it's like a DJ approach of chopping the sample in and out. And I kind of just came up with that in the moment at the time. And I remember like this, I mean, I must have spent about 2-3 hours on this tune and it was kind of done.
Wow.
And I remember getting home thinking, wow, that was magic.
That's the best kind of tune.
Yeah. You know what I mean? That's very rare. Right. that a record takes that long. I've got one other record that took 2 hours, which was You Wish, which is quite amazing. The moments just happen, you know.
Yeah.
They don't, you can't kind of make them happen. They just happen.
You can't make them happen, can you? Yeah. Now, we were talking about keyboard players. You were talking about Bob James earlier, and he did some great tracks like Westchester Lady, Nautilus, and Touchdown, of course. But you sampled one that I didn't know for the track When I'm Feeling Good. And the song that you sampled from Bob was Fireball from his 1983 LP Foxy. Do you want to play a slice of that?
Yeah, such an amazing keyboard player. Amazing.
And for your version, What I'm Feeling, you had more keys on top from Robin.
Yeah, so what we did, so I wanted to make it a little bit more electric, so we used some more Juno, we used some Juno bass in it. I got Robin to play some, and then some of the effects are in the original, but what I did is then I took them and then manipulated them and twisted them out so that they panned across the headphones and stuff, just to make it a bit more trippy and stuff. Like with this sample, and like with the, I would say with the Crusader sample, there was always a method of kind of trying to create that forever moment in a sample, where you don't know where you get lost in it, you don't know where the beginning is, you don't know where the end is, you kind of just want it to keep going and keep going and keep going. And I suppose that was the kind of like psychedelic influence that was in there that I loved about, you know, doing that in this kind of production. You know, it was how far can I trip out on it, how lost, and how much of a tease can it be when it appears in the record, you know?
Right. Well, we're talking about live players, and you obviously had your own live players. And on the song Gambia Via Vegator Beach, you have a whole slew of people playing on that one, including our friend Shovel on percussion.
Yes, my brother Shovel.
Do you want
Shovel.
To tell us? Yeah, he's a great guy. I played with him a lot when I was DJing, and he would be playing percussion alongside. Yeah. Can you tell us a bit how this song came about?
Well, I was in Ibiza, funnily enough.
Really?
I was in 19... let me get this right now. It was 94. We were over with a whole crew from Leeds, from the Up Your Ronson crew and stuff, and they were doing a night at Space, and we was also performing, doing a PA when people did PAs back in the day, a few songs, and Shovel was performing on stage with us, and that's the first time I met him, really. And we were performing the opening of Space Terrace, and then we was here for a week. We ended up hanging out by the pool. I just got back from India, and Shovel had just got back from Gambia, and we were sharing stories, basically. Do you know what I mean? And I was telling him about these drum circles on Vagator Beach in Goa, and he was telling me about these drum circles in Gambia that he'd been to. And then, like, through conversation. I invited him to come up to Leeds, and he came up in the last few days and we're making Smoker's Delight. And basically, I had this idea, we need a campfire tune. We need that tune on the album. Do you know what I mean? That tune where we all sit around, have a smoke around the fire, maybe you tell some stories and play some drums. And that was it. And this is how the song Gambia via Vagator Beach came about.
Let's hear it.
And my good friend Robin Taylor from Melodeon, giving it that Augustus Pablo feel.
Oh, yeah. So George, while we're listening to this, can you tell us how you feel about Smoker's Delight 25 years later? When you listen back to it, how do you feel about the album?
Well, it makes me happy. Mm-hmm. Makes me happy. I know that it's absolute truth. Mm. You know, there were times of making it and that was pretty tough. Do you know what I mean? But I hear truth. Yeah, absolute truth in there. I hear survival in there as well. Do you know what I mean? It was like, this is all I had.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, George, and telling us the story behind Nightmares on Wax, Smoker's Delight, a classic album.
Thank you.
And of course, as we just said, the 25th anniversary edition is now out on Warp. This podcast was from a series of Classic Album Sundays programs that I host for Worldwide FM, an award-winning online radio station with a global audience. If you enjoy this, please subscribe to our weekly Classic Album Sundays podcast via your favorite podcast provider. And keep your ears open for our next one, in which our special guest, spoken word performer and poet Kay Tempest, talks about one of their favorite albums, Brand New Secondhand, the debut album by British hip-hop artist Roots Manuva. If you would like to find out more about Classic Album Sundays, head over to our website, where you can find info on how to join as one of our Patreon members to attend our virtual online events, meetups, and streams. I'm Colleen Cosmo Murphy, and now I encourage you to have a listen to Smoker's Delight by Nightmares on Wax, following our listening guidelines. Turn off your phone, refrain from conversation, turn down the lights, turn up the volume, and then listen to the album all the way through without interruption. Thanks for listening.